The Business Buzz Podcast.
Good evening and welcome to The Business Buzz right here on VAW FM 88.1 for your weekly dose of business, finance and economics news right here on Voice of Vids Radio. We are broadcasting live from our studios right here in Braamfontein, Johannesburg. My name is Mudiwa Mob Justice Kavaza and I'll be your host until about 8 p.m. I'm not alone in studio today. I'm going to be joined by Glory Mabuza, who normally is behind the scenes. But for today, she's going to be with us in the studio, just, you know, hanging around with us because it is Women's Month and we are celebrating that. Last week, you know, we had Lonwabo in the studio and this week we have Glory. So with the country currently facing a high unemployment rate, the youth are left with no choice but to innovate and establish businesses to try and bridge that gap. Universities and other learning institutions are finding ways to try and support student entrepreneurs who are trying to bridge this gap and create employment opportunities. VIS hosted its annual Entrepreneurship Week this week to assist student entrepreneurs to gain access to opportunities to help them accelerate their businesses and their ideas. So for today, in light of all that, we will be having a telephonic conversation with Sedekanya Seribe, who is a social scientist and entrepreneur, about her business idea and the Vids Entrepreneurship Week, and Yanda Hene, am I pronouncing that correctly? The Chief Innovation Officer at Yanda Innovation Consultants, about potentiating your business idea. So that's how the show is going to be looking like. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on social media. We are Voice of Vids on Facebook. That's VAW FM. And then our other Facebook page is the Vids Radio Academy. And then on Twitter, we're at VAW FM. And then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. And then on WhatsApp, we are 08404-9912. And you can also stream the station live on vawfm.co.za. Remember that podcasts of the Business Buzz show are available on vids.journalism.co.za/business. Otherwise, that's, as I said, that's all the show is going to be looking like. On the other side of this, we're going to be getting into the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And then on the other side of that, we are going to get into a little bit of Ever Wondered. Keep it locked. This is The Business Buzz.
The Business Buzz. Business Wrap with Ken Swetman.
It's time for us to get into the business wrap. That's a part of the show where we give you a roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news. And on the line, we are joined by our financial expert. We have Lebo Pasha. How are you, Lebo?
I'm good, Madira. How are you? And greetings to the listeners, too.
No, we're doing all right. It's been a while since we last heard your voice on the show, and we see that you've been trend-setting out there. How is life, and what's been going on in the economy?
Yeah, no, I'm really good. I hope the economy is doing as good as I am, but it isn't at this stage. But definitely there's a lot of interesting things happening in the economy. There's been a lot of activity, and I think the biggest thing right now for me is looking back. I'm very reflective. I'm looking back a year, and around this time last year, we had President Cyril Ramaphosa launching the stimulus plan for South Africa and hoping to turn around the economy. So that, I think, is probably the biggest thing right now when I look back on the past year. And that doesn't seem to have gone really well so far. We see that unemployment has gone up, and we're also seeing a lot of negative news around the SOEs, and economic growth has also slowed down for the country. We've slipped into a recession. Not into a recession, but GDP growth has slowed down for the country, and we're on the brink of a recession if we have economic growth slowing down in the third quarter of 2019.
And then I guess with all of that stuff, the thing I'm interested to know is, what do you think of what the last 12 months have meant for the South African economy, seeing as it is that you're such a reflective human being when it comes to this sort of thing?
I think the biggest thing for me, the biggest reality is that we seem to know what we need to do as South Africans to get the economy turned around. We've been talking about these things for at least the past 5 years, but we haven't done enough. And I think that's the biggest issue. That's the same sentiment from the ratings agency. They say, you know what you need to do, but there doesn't seem to be sufficient political will in your government to actually do what needs to be done. We need to fight corruption. We need to look at making SOEs and government itself more efficient, because it's both government and the SOEs have a very bloated labor force that isn't that productive. We need to get things right, for example, in education. Our education standard, the value for money we're getting from education, isn't where it needs to be. We spend more on education than the whole budget of some of our neighbors and other African countries. But our standard of education isn't right at the top of the African continent. So there's a lot of things that we need to really start being honest about, especially around the political will to turn around our current situation, because we do know what we need to do, but we're just not doing it.
Speaking of political will, I understand the U.S.-China trade war has actually resulted in Huawei making further inroads to life outside of Android.
Yes. This shows how a lot of corporates try to deal with whatever challenges they face, and they find ways around the problem. And Huawei has taken the route of trying to develop its own operating system for its mobile phones and other devices. So this would include also your smaller laptops that use Android. And this new mooted sort of OS is called Hongmeng. And it's currently being developed, but the big issue, I think, around it is that Apple has sort of mastered the ecosystem business model, where they have a very closed ecosystem around their software, and they aggregate technology and assembly from across the world. So you'd see on Apple devices, the OS is designed in California, and then the other part of it is made around the world. So Huawei is now trying to shift and be more self-reliant when it comes to the software, because Android is actually owned by Google, which is an American company. And because of the trade war, American businesses have basically been banned from working with Chinese businesses, which means that if you've got a Huawei phone, you're going to start having issues around Android updates, and possibly also looking at Google and Gmail as well.
And then lastly, sort of coming to where the week has sort of led us now, just watching the markets yesterday, especially international markets, I think the Dow in the U.S. lost more than 300 points or something like that. And it was all around the fears of another recession. People are talking yield curves and, you know, things like that. Any light?
Yes, so the yield curve inversion, in simple terms, it's basically an indicator that market players are losing confidence in the ability of an economy to perform well and to continue growing into the foreseeable future. And it's usually a early indicator of a recession. And in the U.S., analysts have looked at this over the past couple of decades, 50 years back, and they've seen that every time you have a recession, before that you have the yield curve inversion. And that's not the only issue. The bigger issue globally is that the UK and Germany are also slowing down. So their 2019 quarter two economic growth has slowed down, and these are major economies, and with Germany, one of the biggest issues is lower exports because of the China-US trade war again. And the US itself has slowed down. So you've got three major economies, the UK, Germany, and the US slowing down. China is a lot more cagey with its information, but if China is also slowing down, I think we may see a return to a global recession like we had in 2008. And this time it could be much worse. Not just globally, because of monetary easing, where a lot of governments are now more in debt, but even locally with South Africa, because our level of indebtedness at the corporate rate and even for consumers is extremely high right now. And our government is approaching a not-so-great milestone of debt being close to 60% of the GDP or our annual production. And if we do slip into another global recession, it's going to be extremely bad.
Threats, fears, and a bit of dismay on the markets just around. Yes, gloom and doom, just around threats of a global recession. That is our financial expert, Lebo Pashak, just giving us the roundup of the week's top trending business and economics news in our business wrap. As you heard, the big news is the fact that there are fears of a global recession, and also the fact that Huawei has also come out with their own user interface, UI, operating system, and that's as they plan for a life after Android as U.S.-China trade relations continue to escalate and the tension continues to build. And then the other thing is just some issues just around South Africa and threats of unemployment and the like. So that's it in terms of our business wrap. On the other side of this, we're going to be telling you just a little bit about something that you've ever wondered about in business. Keep it locked. This is the Business Buzz. It's time for us to get into Ever Wondered. This is, you know, something we do every once in a while, just trying to educate the people out there about a little financial term. And today we're going to be talking about something that we hear about all the time, but something that our show is going to be focused on, and that is entrepreneurship and entrepreneurs. And I found something very interesting here, and I was like, no, this needs to be shared with the people. And basically, I found a definition of what an entrepreneur is and the type of characteristics that they need to be able to either exhibit, or, you know, the type of things that they need to have to actually succeed. So basically here we're saying that an entrepreneur can be defined as someone who starts and builds a successful business, or someone who is willing to take the risks where others are not. If you are thinking of starting your own business, you will need certain entrepreneurial skills, management capabilities, business skills, and personal attributes to succeed in the competitive business market. Even if you do not have all the skills needed to be a good entrepreneur, there are some basic must-have skills when it comes to operating any kind of business. So the type of personal characteristics that someone needs to have: a successful entrepreneur has to have certain values, beliefs, and personal attributes such as focus, such as optimism, initiative, drive, resilience, self-confidence, and flexibility. And the most interesting one for me there is self-confidence. That's the ability to be confident in oneself, the product and the business. And then a person also needs to have interpersonal skills, because as an entrepreneur, we have to work closely with other people and must be able to build good interpersonal relationships. Some of the following things, such as good communication, leadership and motivation, negotiation, respect and integrity, problem solving, and decision making are some of the more important interpersonal skills. And then some practical skills that one needs to have, because most entrepreneurs start out small and have to fulfill a number of different roles within the business. So you have to be a jack of all trades. So some of the skills you need to have is time management, administration, planning and organizing, marketing and sales, and also a bit of financial know-how, because the rands and the naras need to go and come from somewhere. And then the last one is, if you want to actually become an entrepreneur, you need to think of an idea, write a business plan, attract an investor, and then sell and distribute your product. It really sounds nice in theory, doesn't it? But we're going to be talking to some entrepreneurs who are going to tell us, you know, is it really as basic or as nice and nicely packaged as what we are being told here, or is it really a hustle, as they say? So that's been it in terms of our Ever Wondered. On the other side of this, we get into our main topic.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
This is the Business Buzz. We are here until about 8 p.m. And today we are talking a lot just around entrepreneurship. It is Women's Month and we are celebrating women in business, women in the corporate sphere and the like. And that's what our show is going to be looking like. But remember that you can keep in touch with us on social media. Our Facebook page is Vitz Radio Academy. And then you can also find our other Facebook page that is Vow FM or Voice of Vitz. And then on Twitter, we're at Vow FM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz. So it's time for us to get into our main topic. Glory, you know, who do we have? What are we talking about? Yeah.
So today in the studio, we have Silikanye Siribe, who is a Vitz Master's graduate in Demography and Population Studies. She's a young, dynamic social scientist who is passionate about social entrepreneurship in agriculture and capacity building. Her dream is to establish an African herbal research institution to create sustainable health facility and fight poverty. Joining us in studio today is the one and only Silikanye. Welcome, Silikanye. It's so lovely to have you today.
Thank you so much for having me here. It's such a good pleasure.
Great. So we've heard just a brief summary of who you are as an individual, but I'd like to hear from you. Can you please kindly give us a brief overview of who Silikanye is, your academic background, and what is it exactly that you do for a living?
Okay. My journey started like 10 years ago when I arrived in Johannesburg, and I was a first student first year. When I started, I was a street kid, and I used to sleep at 222 Smith Street, and that used to be my home until the Vets SRC intervened and I got managed to get a raise, and this is how I got to where I am today, because I appreciate the effort of people who actually took initiative in helping me and getting me where I am. Mm. Yeah.
So we've heard just a bit of your journey leading up to how you actually got to Vitz, but I'm particularly interested in you wanting to establish an African herbal research institution that will use indigenous medicine to create a sustainable health facility and fight poverty. Can you please tell me more about this business idea and how exactly it came about?
Okay, in 2010, I started having a health problem, and this health problem couldn't be solved by biomedicine. I went for my treatment at Joburg Gen, and things didn't work out for me. Mm. I appreciated the effort that the biomedical personnel did there. Did everything that could to help me get better. But then my situation or my instance could not be solved by biomedicine. And only then traditional health medicine came in, whereby my grandmother, when she was still alive, may her blessed soul rest in power. She realized that what I had was a calling, an ancestral calling, of which could not be depicted by biomedicine. And from there, then I realized that my grandmother, obviously she passed away. I realized that the knowledge that he had on having me to be here in the studio alive and kicking, her knowledge put me here. But I wanted to have a sustainable model on how to make sure that her knowledge, not her knowledge per se, but then the African indigenous healing knowledge is passed through. in a sense that we have to have institutionalized ideas, not only ideas, but implementation strategies that are used to heal African people, of which there are not really established institutions that really need give us a platform to know exactly where I'll be. For instance, I come from the rural villages, Tabasioni village in Tsoying municipality in northwest. Where I come from, health facilities are placed. They are placed apart from each other, and to reach there, you need some sort of capital to get there. These people rely on traditional healers to navigate their health and even to solve their immediate challenges when it comes to health. But then what I realized is that was the gap of formalizing the African traditional botany or health medical system.
Mm. So why exactly do you feel that it's very important for Africans to actually commercialize these herbal medicines and indigenous plants?
We need to decolonize the framework of how the knowledge production is being placed. In a sense that even when you go deep down research, when you come to botany or herbalism a framework, it has always been put as a negative connotation. It's witchcraft. It's something that you can not use. But if you are a person like me, like Silikanye, who gets a calling out of nowhere, I don't know if it is out of nowhere, but to me it's like out of nowhere. Why didn't I get picked it up? But then I realized that my mind structure is placed in a sense that I have to actually obey and praise the biomedicine without realizing the potential of the natural plants near me that could actually intervene to promote my health. And all of these things are structural in such a sense that they date back to our colonial system. But then this is a moment where we have to integrate both the traditional way of healing as much as the biomedicine, because biomedicine cannot heal everything. That's for sure. It cannot. I am the present example of that. I was attending my treatment at Joburg Gen, but doctors there couldn't detect exactly what my problem was until my grandmother referred me to another Gobela, which is a professor in terms of African botany, to actually initiate me into knowing exactly how to cap into indigenous healing systems.
So Lekanya, I just wanted to maybe get a sense from you, because it sounds like one of the things you're saying is that there isn't enough institutional knowledge, at least, you know, in our modern libraries about this sort of thing. So your research, because you're a master's graduate, was it around this, and what was your actual question?
Okay. This, my academia and my talent, I would say, in entrepreneurship, we would call it a talent, something that you are born with.
Yeah.
I was born with this gift.
Yeah.
Right. And then this gift, when I get to vets, I don't have a platform where I can fully emancipate myself as a whole Silikanye.
Yeah.
And then from there, there's a gap in terms of knowledge production. And that's why I saw that as much as there are botanical research institutions, but they do not even tap into the Africanism. Africanism in such a sense of language itself. I may not know a plant in the name of maybe your Dutch, of which most botanical theory is based on. I may not know the term in English, but I may know it in Setswana. Mm. And that doesn't mean that I'm half intellect in such a space. So how do we then break or actually disrupt this a knowledge production institution in a sense? So what I came with when I thought of a Peoria Africa Agri Digital Institute is that yes, I'm initiated at this moment, but there's going to be a point where I have to initiate other people.
Yeah.
How am I going to initiate them?
Mm.
How? And then if I die, then what happens to these people?
Yeah.
Hence the Peoria Africa Agro Digital Institute.
Mm.
To be like, even if I'm dead, there's certain knowledge that my ancestors are passing through me, whether it's through divination, through dreams, through visions, whatever the medium that they may be using to communicate with me, it's actually kept and actually it's formed as a medical industrialization from there. Even if you were to think about the era of the previous president, Thabo Mbeki, to say that as much as we were trying to find sustainable solutions to health, we cannot put Africans aside in terms of their knowledge, because biomedicine, I believe from my perspective, only heals the physical aspect. There's a spiritual essence, there's a emotional essence to that. What about what happens to this? But when I realized that a healing system does not only deal with the physique, it deals with the emotions and the mental thing. That's when I actually started accepting my calling, because in the initial stages, I had rejected it because I felt like I'm modernized. I felt like this thing won't work for me.
Mm.
Until actually I had to burn and actually beg for my life from my ancestors. And actually they gave it to me with conditions that actually you're going to expand this knowledge. But I didn't want to choose either or between my academia and my talent or my gift, in such a sense that I would want to push this thing. So my master's topic was on household structures and secondary school dropout. And then what I realized then that there are gaps in terms of communication between a caregiver and this young child in the family. So the family structure is disrupted. What forms that? It's the colonial structure.
Mm.
But then how to really decolonize this thing? It's actually to formulate an institution that will offer an alternative space of knowledge production, unlike vets, whereby I will be studying biological sciences.
Mm.
There are certain essences that they wouldn't capture, as much as they are, as much as digitized in terms of checking the taxonomy and all of that. But I still have the natural knowledge, the indigenous knowledge that was passed on by my grandmothers and people who were around me to actually hear this. And when it comes to this, you don't have a choice. You are given this thing. And the best way to navigate your way is to find a best platform on how to implement this. So for me to be like, since while I got an opportunity to be exposed to vets, even though I'm from a village, a village that a car passes after 2 hours.
Mm.
But then how do I make sure that this whole thing brings an impact in the society? I mean, in Tabasioni village, we have a sand rock adventist. You can even find the evidence in Origin Center.
Yeah.
This kind of international heritage, and they're not well taken care of in villages.
Mm.
So that's where I come in. To be like, these are the spaces that can actually create economy, whether through tourism, whether through working the soil or anything like that. But at the end of the day, people can know exactly where am I using the kind of the gift that I was given by my ancestors.
Okay. The reason I had brought that up is just wanted to maybe, because you've spoken a lot about it, is what do you think, because you've already mentioned a lot of challenges,
mm-hmm.
right? And as someone who's sort of done some work to add to bodies of knowledge and all of that stuff already, you know what it takes to actually put together research, put it out, make it peer-reviewed, all of that stuff. So for you, in terms of your gift, right, what do you think is probably the biggest challenge in terms of actually creating either books or pieces of knowledge that are accessible to everyday people? What do you think is the biggest one?
Okay, the connotation behind traditional healing systems.
Mm.
Remember when biomedicine was promoted, they had to actually kill the indigenous way of healing.
Mm.
In that sense, it becomes challenging because there has never been an institution that is actually Africanized.
Okay.
Yeah, that we get a lot of, for instance, supplements.
Yeah.
You get to your supermarkets, your clicks, you get to supplements section. These products are imported into the country.
Mm.
The same people take the plant here, go test it overseas, come here, formulate a product. We are the consumers.
Yeah.
But then how then Peoria Africa comes is to disrupt this, to be like, our knowledge, this is our knowledge. Because the same person who comes from the UK will access a Ngaka, a Sangoma, a divinator, or a traditional healer to get access to know the potential of this plant.
Mm.
And this person takes this plant, go test it wherever that they test it, and actually realize the potential use of this.
Mm.
Comes back here and formulate a product that you are going to consume as an African person.
Mm.
But with Bio Africa, we want to disrupt that, to say we want to be accountable for producing our knowledge, the production, as well as the end results in terms of consuming the same knowledge that we had produced.
Mm.
Again, we have never given a space where, as traditional healers, we can implement our strategies, our frameworks of healing. And with this, it still marginalizes our population, because when you look at research, 80% of our population, black population, are still going to consult Dingaka.
Mm.
And then having to consult them, how do you make me feel as Ngaka? You come to me during the dark. During the day, you don't come to me.
I get you.
So that thing needs to be changed. Because to me, you feel, I feel like you're using my skills for, like, you are not even proud of me giving you that kind of help.
Mm.
So I thought of that to be like, when I get to that level where I have to initiate, how different will I be?
Mm.
In a sense that I got an opportunity to even have access to institutions like this.
Mm.
It means having to digitalize the whole thing.
Mm.
I mean, we have institutions like in mining industries, they come here, they only realize what's underneath the soil. But on top of the soil, they don't realize the gold that we have. You're disrupting our biodiversity there. What are you doing then to give back to the society, to be like, when I came here, I found alu having to be dominant here. But after mining, alu is not there. What can you do actually to give it back there? So there are no institutions that really capture that indigenous plants that we need to use them for our fourth industrial health challenges. Because not everything is going to be solved by technology.
Yeah.
We still need the human touch to
yeah,
that.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true.
You know, as you speak and as you make mention of the indigenous plant aloe vera, I'm reminded of growing up as a child and having to listen to all these remedies that our grandparents used to give us. And they always used to make mention of these plants. And now we walk into shops and we start seeing these aloe drinks and aloe vitamin pills and whatnot to help us. So I see the vision. I see where you're coming from when you when you advocate for the commercializing of indigenous plants. So earlier you made mention to me that mining companies are also your target, as they are the type of people, industry that usually come into contact with these indigenous plants on a day-to-day, right? So tell me why do you feel that it's important for you to get involved with them in that aspect?
Okay, the mining industry in South Africa penetrates a lot of land. Mm-hmm. And when they get there, they would be arguing that this is some form of a resort that we could change into mining. To me, as a traditional healer, it's like, if my ancestors lead me to this way, to be like, go to Mpumalanga in Mpangeni municipality, get this kind of plant, and I get there and the mining industry has disrupted it, what are they doing to actually make sure that what they got there actually got sustained? Mm. So to me, it's like you disturbing the natural the natural environment. Then if you mine in this area at Wits, if you finish the gold or coal or whatever it is that you mining, what's going to happen to the upper level of the land? Are you going to try and try to bring the biodiversity that you found there? Because certain things are natural to such an extent that even if I were to try them in America, they wouldn't work because they only work into African climate. So how is it that they are trying to do that? Because my aim with Power Africa is to say, yes, mining companies are here. You found this kind of plant here. Mm-hmm. So if you are finished with this, how do we rehabilitate the soil so that it reproduces the same kind of natural biodiversity that it has? Mm-hmm. So, but then because of challenges in terms of pollution and everything, of which affects the climate change, we need to find ways on how to do this. So to fast track the bioprint in South Africa is to make sure that the same plants that we are sure that are habitually confident there, we can just go fetch them where they are, replant them where the mines were, and actually find the biodiversity that it was at the first place.
Now that we've heard your journey and your story, right, I'd like to hear from you. How have the sessions that were developed by the Wits Entrepreneurship Week helped you, and where to from here now?
Okay, they helped me in terms of sustainability because I'm coming from an essence where I'm tapping into sacred world. Yeah. A lot of people who come before me would feel challenged to be like, how do you dare then sell our secret? Mm. Right? But this entrepreneurship work is to say, it's not only a secret to you as human beings, it's sacred to the soil. I'm a climate advocate. If I see the environment green, I feel alive. Mm. For instance, I will be working out of this studio right now, going back to the labs and everything. When I get out of the studio, I'm going to see botanical labs. To me, I call labs. All these gardens, that vets, these flowers that you see. To me, it's a healing plant. You see them as flowers that are flourishing your day to make your day blossom. To me, it's a healing plant. So it's only a matter of trying to disrupt the space to be like, this knowledge has been kept away from us, and we've been actually put in a stigma sense that if you are a traditional healer, you're doing wrong things. Traditional healers, most of them are doing the right things, and out there, like, people are relying on them. People who are far from health facilities. Hence, Peru Africa is coming here to bring alternative healthcare systems. You go to Mai Mai, you get these plants. You are not even sure if they're going to work for you or not. BioAfrica wants to take the same plants. We are not saying that as you, as a Sangoma, you don't know what you're doing. What we're saying is that we're taking the same plant that we have identified, take it to the lab, test it, and see how far it can get you. And then that knowledge will be solely yours. We don't own anything as the institution. What we're saying is that we are grasping you as an individual who has this passion to resolve social illnesses using medical plants and actually making sure that the world is green. Mm. Mm-hmm.
That was quite a mouthful. Thank you so much, Selekanye Seribe, for joining us in the studio today. We really appreciate you taking time to share your business idea with us. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Selekanye Seribe, who is a WITS master's graduate in demography and population studies. She is aspiring to start an African herbal research institution. So we look forward to hearing more from that and to seeing it become an actual business. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for giving me the space. It's one of the step ahead to making sure that this idea is actually implemented. This is a social entrepreneurship, mainly as much as it will be bringing in money, but it will be for personal view. It will be for my village, Tabasioni. We have a lot of people who are unemployed. We have a lot of poverty. But when you walk on the land, I see gold to me. But then because it's not a gift that it's always given to each other, to everybody, I'm willing to be in a space to teach you about the natural way of healing, because it has worked for me when I had cerebral tonsillectomy, because I couldn't manage the pain, I couldn't manage the medical expenses and everything, but in nature has managed to provide those things. And all of those things, some of the plants are endangered in a sense that only few species are left. So BioAfrica, what it aims to do is to take them, reproduce them into a larger scale, commercialize them, and make natural supplements from that.
Okay. Thank you so much, Selekanye. So joining us in the next segment is Yandi Sahene, who will be giving us more insight on how to change a business idea into an actual business.
You're tuned in to the Business Buzz.
We are talking entrepreneurship. We're talking women in business, women in corporate, women doing the things out here in the economy. And right now we want to switch over to Yandi Sahene, who is the Chief Innovation Officer at Yanda Innovation Consultants. She actually holds a bachelor's degree in economics, honors in financial analysis and portfolio management from UCT, and an honors degree in brand management from Vegas School, and has assisted some of the largest brands in South Africa's organizations to actually do some of the brand launches. She's also a knowledgeable business coach and a public speaker with more than 15 years experience in the FMCG sector. How are you, Yandisa?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm all right. Could you, you know, just so that we are all on the same page, could you just give us who and what is Yanda Innovation Consultants, and how did the actual company come about?
Thank you so much. Basically, Yanda Innovation Consultants, it's an innovation and entrepreneurship consulting and training agency. So basically our focus is to say we want to be a catalyst for the growth of your business. So we're really all about growing businesses, hence the name Yanda, which means to increase and to expand.
Yeah.
So we work with our clients and we say, let's partner with you, look at various ways in which we can actually grow your business, and what kind of interventions can we actually put in place to actually grow your business. So that's who Yanda Innovation Consultants is in a nutshell. Now, in terms of how the business actually came about, it came about from a pain point, to be honest with you. I was actually, I was really concerned about just helping young black businesses that didn't have resources or maybe didn't have the skills and capabilities to actually basically provide for themselves and their families. So it really started out as a hobby and not really something that I had any intentions of making money out of or growing into a larger business. And as I obviously started helping out all these entrepreneurs, I really realized that this was actually a purpose of mine, to teach people how to actually better themselves, better their lives, so they can provide for their families.
Yeah.
And I really found that there was a need for this on a larger scale, especially in the South African context. And therefore, that's how the business actually was conceptualized, and it just grew from there.
I just wanted to check, did you, I'm sure you caught the last part of our last interview. We were with Sele Kanye, who is, her dream is to establish the African Herbal Research Institute. And, you know, maybe, you know, using her example of trying to commercialize something that foreigners have been commercializing in South Africa for such a long time. How would you maybe take her through the process at Yanda about commercializing her idea?
So at Yanda, obviously we have great coaches and we use some great tools, right? So through business coaching, through training, the tool that we use is what we call the growth wheel tool.
Yeah.
It gives a 360-degree perspective of your business. It's actually a framework that's used to start having structured conversations about your business, regardless of what stage it's at. So it basically helps startups and companies build their businesses through a simple, almost I can say, action-orientated process. So if we were looking at her business, the first thing we would do is we'd look at the four lasting challenges that all businesses have. The first thing we'd look at is, out of the four, would be the business concept, okay? Does she have an attractive business concept?
Mm.
And we would obviously go through these various questions that we'd actually that we'd ask to uncover whether this is something that's attractive not to her, but if it's attractive to the market, if it's actually differentiated, if it actually adds value. So that's the first thing we'd go through.
Yeah.
And if not, how can we actually improve this business further? The second thing that we'd look at is, do you have a strong organization to support, or have you built a strong organization to support this concept that you have? Now, in that, having a strong organization doesn't mean you need to employ people. Do you have other brothers, sisters, anyone that you can tap into that can give you business advice on a regular basis? So the third thing we'd look at is we'd look at client relationships. How can we go about building strategies to actually acquire new client relationships, but also to actually create lasting client relationships?
Yeah.
And then finally, the fourth thing we'd look at is, do you have profitable are your operations profitable? So do you have the necessary machinery, the necessary tools and processes in place to build a profitable business?
Mm.
And if you don't, what are the steps that we need to take, actionable steps that we need to take, and decisions that we need to make for you to actually be able to achieve that? So that is, it's really a long process, but that's it in a nutshell, really.
And are there usually time frames for this type of thing, or does it sort of just work on an individual basis, just along what the business is?
So the reality is, there's no fixed time frame, because every business is really different, right? The first thing you have to consider is, how easy is it to set up your business? If you are setting up a business that doesn't really require a lot of capital, and it's really just your intellectual property, the setup costs are really quite cheap, almost close to nothing. But then what becomes very important then is obviously networking and having knowing people, maybe in the right places or decision makers.
Yeah.
If it's a manufacturing business, then obviously now you have to consider things like registering the IPs, licensing, getting the funds to buy the capital. So it really differs from the business, from the type of business that you're actually running. So there's no one size fits all.
And then switching over, I guess, maybe to just general entrepreneurship, it is Women's Month, and one of the themes that we're just looking at on our show is what it means to be a woman in business. And perhaps you could give us, in the intro, it really does sound like you have extensive experience just in and around the corporate sector and the SME sector as well. So what do you think are some of the challenges that young women are facing at the moment in South Africa? And is it unique to South Africa from your experience?
So, there are definitely challenges for young female entrepreneurs. And I think the biggest challenge, which I could probably answer, give an answer to as well, is there are a lot of decision makers that you need to approach when you're in business.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, if you're straight out of university, and if maybe you don't come from a very privileged background, your access to decision makers and also how you approach decision makers is also going to be very limited.
Mm.
So as a female entrepreneur, the biggest challenge is that there are already people in the industry that are actually established that are being used by potential clients. And therefore the question really was, how do I then differentiate myself, and how do I then make myself stand out versus people that are established that have been in the industry, and people that sometimes probably play golf together and, you know, go fishing. And, you have to be so good that they actually cannot ignore you, and you have to be persistent, continue to just knock on the same doors 1,000 times. Don't give up when someone says a no, maybe you're asking the wrong person, or you find a different way of approaching that person. So I found that for me has really been the biggest challenge. But I think another challenge maybe is, as women, I think we really underestimate what we actually can do.
Mm.
Everyone else actually knows how good you are. It's just that you haven't woken up to your brilliance.
Yeah.
And that's actually the problem. And once you sit in these boardrooms, and once you sit in these meetings, you actually start to realize that, goodness, I actually know a lot more than some of the people here, or, you know, so I think don't underestimate what you actually bring to the table.
I know that Glory has a bit of a question before we come to the end of this discussion. Glory?
So, Yandisa, I'm sure there are other female entrepreneur students out there who aspire to be like you. What would your message be to those female entrepreneur students particularly students who are looking to start their businesses and one day also run a business just like you?
Well, that's a question that has a lot of answers. To be honest with you, I'd be doing you a lot of injustice if I only gave you one answer. So if it's okay with you, I think just to help out, you know, the young entrepreneurs, so perhaps maybe I can just give you a few that I really think would probably... just a bit of advice that would probably help some of the entrepreneurs. I think coming out of university, one of the best things that you can do for yourself, if possible, is try and actually get some corporate experience.
Mm.
And the reason I actually say this is that to start a business, you need money. And in most instances, most young students don't have money. So actually starting out in corporate is a great way of putting aside money. Yeah, it's also pushing your side hustle as well.
Yeah.
It also, what it does is that it also provides you with connections. So you meet people when you're in corporate, and those are connections that will become very useful when you run your business. But also the skills that you learn in corporate. So learn on someone else's time. So let them pay for your training. Let them teach you how to do PowerPoint presentations, etc. So that when you run your own business, you are actually well equipped. So if you can, work in corporate for a short while, just acquire skills and money so that you can go out and build on your own. The other thing that I would say is, more than anything, don't think about what can I do to make money. Ask yourself, what is actually my purpose?
Mm.
What am I on this planet for? because that's the only way that you actually be able to ride out the tough times. And no hobby is ever done enough. So if you think, imagine if, you know, as a kid, if Ronaldo thought, you know, playing soccer is really a waste of time, et cetera, he wouldn't actually be Ronaldo. Imagine if Trevor Noah thought, you know, making jokes is really not something I can make a living for, and look at him now making money out of his hobby. The most money that you ever really make will probably be out of the things that you enjoy and things that actually give you purpose. So that would really be my advice. And the other thing I would say is, the final thing is really, I would say, just start. Like, sometimes you want to perfect everything, but your business will only really get perfected as you go along and you get feedback along the way. So actually just start. The very little, something as small and that you may think is really small as opening a business bank account.
Yeah.
Just go and do it. Because trust me, what you want to do is you want to stay ready so you don't have to get ready when the opportunity arises.
You need to stay ready so that when the opportunity arises, you are always ready. Those are the words of Yandi Sahene, who is the Chief Innovation Officer at Yanda Innovation Consultants. Unfortunately, we have run out of time for today. It was quite an amazing discussion that we had to in the show. Thank you so much to all our guests. Thank you so much to Yandi. Thank you so much to Selekanye for being with us. Remember that you can keep in touch with us on social media. We are Vow FM, that's Voice of Vids, and also our other Facebook page is the Vids Radio Academy. On Twitter, we're at VowFM, and then our hashtag is hashtag Business Buzz, and you can stream the station live on vowfm.co.za. Remember that podcasts of the Business Buzz show are available on vids.journalism.co.za/business. So with that, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much to our amazing team, to our executive producers, that is Simba Honde together with Gloria Mabuza, as well as our producers, Lonobo Sidnebi and Silindi Lemsibi. So don't miss the Business Buzz, same time, same place next week for more insight into the world of business. Shout out to my co-host for today, that's Glory Mabuza. Usually she's behind the scenes, she's a dope producer, but today, you know, she was holding it down with us here in the studio. Next up on Navao FM, we have Living Electro. Remember that the Business Buzz is sponsored by ABSA. So for myself, Mudio Mob, Justice Gavaza, and the rest of the team, it's a good evening and take care.
The Business Buzz Podcast.